Our seats continued to turn slowly and his voice became, for lack of other noises and sounds, the center of my attention. He continued, "Among you there are some who will contribute to the re-establishment of your world's original beauty." By now, I couldn't tell fact from fiction. The seats stopped turning and we ended up facing him. He started to talk to those who were in the first line. To these first five he called individually by their names and looked deeply into their eyes. He gave them some sort of task. Some were assigned to the care of the animals, others to the sea and its many species. Others were assigned to agriculture, the birds and others things I don't recall. When it was my turn I remembered I couldn't look him in the eye. I was terrified of his deep penetrating look, even though I didn't look at him, still he addressed me. "Amori, you will help with the nature renewal of your world. You'll help the trees, the grass, and most importantly the flowers live on after what's to come." I simply didn't understand. I knew nothing of flowers or trees, other than they needed earth, water, and sunlight. He then mentioned the name of the boy sitting on my right and proceeded to instruct him, as he did also with the rest of us. "Have you understood what I've just told you?" Dash he asked. Nobody said a word. It seems as if some of us shook our heads in response to what the strange subject dressed in black asked us. He said that in time we would understand, that now we were just like children. He then said, "Children are born without knowledge. However, step by step they acquire knowledge and wisdom. This is how it will happen for you as well." I still didn't dare look at him. I feared meeting his intimidating eyes. I looked everywhere except in his direction. When he addressed the whole group I could look at him. But when he fixed his eyes on me I could not face him. Slowly the landscape started to lose all its colors and started to vibrate visually. Everything then faded to darkness. When we could see again, or when the lights we could not see turned on, we found ourselves in that same room with the human who had identified himself as Amaran. Beside him stood his two monstrosities. In this first projection there are many details I have omitted. I basically gave a general idea. The projections I am about to narrate are short but shocking. They contain chilling and horrifying scenes. These are the most important given to us by this being for our humanity. My sincere intention is not to alarm or traumatize anybody, but there's no other way of presenting them without doing so. In all truth, the images we saw are alarming not just for my country, but for the entire world. It's extremely hard for me to put into words the horror and suffering that those other 14 people and myself went through when we saw that horrendous panorama. The dates of the events I'm about to describe were not given to us. Yet with every day that goes by I'm more convinced that we're not that far off. I now understand what others before me, who have had something to say and nobody listened, have gone through. It's up to you, the reader, to take action or wait till it's too late. I beg you not to wait until they close the doors of the symbolic Ark and so prepare yourselves and in a timely manner enter the Ark of Life. Don't wait to feel the rain fall on your face. Out of a sense of duty I give you the next projection. Chapter 4, Projection Number 2. The room seemed as it had grey walls again. These apparently solid walls now turned into light. Daylight. Suddenly we were all sitting on top of a mountain. It was a nice sunny day. As opposed to the first projection, this one had sound. We could hear the breeze between the trees, birds chirping, cars in the distance and even a rooster. This projection appeared even more real than the other because of the sound. The only thing left was to feel the actual breeze in my hair and the sun on my skin. From my position I could see the ocean and lots of little houses spread out everywhere. The lampposts looked like toothpicks. The vegetation of this place, though green, wasn't as alive as the one we'd previously seen and there were no flowers. The green was rather opaque in comparison. Our seats started to turn and we then saw some towers that looked like they were used for communication of sorts. The guide told us that this place was in the western part of Puerto Rico. It looked like a normal, peaceful day. Judging from the sun's orientation it might have been around noon. All of a sudden everything was engulfed in a dark shadow, as if the day had sped up tremendously. As I looked up, I saw something obstructing the sun. Only a small portion of the sun was visible. I thought of maybe an eclipse. A loud buzzing sound was heard in the distance. Like continuous thunder. We all saw it at the same time, up in the sky, a rock. It was crumbling into pieces as it came down, but its size instead of decreasing only increased as it got closer. Everyone in our group, including our guide and his two companions, was headed towards that dark object that fell from the sky. Before we left that position on the top of the mountain, I thought I heard what seemed to be people screaming. I couldn't see them, but I heard them. Some of the others that were with me also started to scream. It was horrifying. I wanted to jump out of my seat, but where would I go? I remember wanting to close my eyes, but I could not. I had to see. I'll never forget those screams. They were so haunting, I felt an almost uncontrollable urge to tear my clothes off. As the object got closer, I noticed it was on fire. For a moment I thought it was the sun, but when we got to a height that placed us over the rock, the sun was then on top of us. We now had a better view of it. It had an enormous fire tail made up of its own burning pieces, like lava. I placed my hands on my ears and yelled off the top of my lungs, "Nuu!" The thunder-like sound got so loud I thought my eardrums would burst. I simply cannot describe the sound this rock island made as it fell. If you'd stand close to the space shuttle's rockets during takeoff, maybe you would have an idea of what it was like. It got to the point where I could not even hear myself screaming. I was about to collapse, and I think I actually did for a moment. I'm not lying when I say that at the time I went mad. We apparently fell with this island rock. The falling sensation was terrible. By then I'd stopped screaming and could only watch dumbfounded as the next events unfolded. We stopped in mid-air and saw the rock hit the ocean, near the western coast of Puerto Rico. It caused an explosion, as if a bomb had gone off. The impact created a huge vapor, water and smoke ball that reached our position in the air. I thought we'd get wet, but this was impossible. The island was shaken. We descended a bit more near the coast. The screams were heard again, and every time the island shook, every tree vibrated. The sun still shone as if unaware of all that was happening. The vapor ball turned into a rain that fell everywhere. We then heard another thunder-like sound, but this time caused by an earthquake. A woman that was in group couldn't take it anymore and fainted. She slipped from her seat, and I thought she would fall into that disaster, yet she only fell on the invisible floor of that projection room. She looked like she was floating in the air while unconscious. The two beings with features like heads rapidly went to her as if gliding through the air. They picked her up and placed her in her seat, yet she was still not conscious. I thought of helping her, but I simply felt paralyzed and about to pass out myself. I couldn't feel my feet anymore. The little men returned to the human guide's side when something immense caught my attention. A wall had been raised, a gigantic, threatening, mortal wave. This devastating wall kept getting bigger as the water receded from the shore, leaving an uncommon landscape visible to the naked eye. Corals, reefs and all kinds of sea life were now exposed to the direct sunlight. We could see underwater valleys and hills, as well as great aquatic cliffs. What I could only guess were fish leapt over the now exposed seafloor due to the ocean being pulled back. The wall grew solid and overwhelming. I thought of my friends and family. Then I thought they were only cleverly projected images. I heard the island shake again, and with it the horror screams of the Puerto Rican population. When the sea had receded a few miles out, the wall then started to make its way to the island. I could imagine what was about to happen. I wanted to beg the human guide to stop the projection. I looked at him and his two companions for a moment and I felt hate. He was just standing there so unmoved while all this was happening, sure of himself, untouchable. I didn't want to see what was happening, but all the while I couldn't stop watching. The Great Wall was approaching land. It got to the coast, but it didn't stop there. It kept going inland. It seemed to be dragging everything in its path. Thousands of hysterical screams were drowned. In a matter of seconds, everything was dead silent. The giant wave broke somewhere out of our range of vision. It covered everything, even the mountains. Somehow we started to get a better view of everything. The sea was full of debris and garbage. We saw hundreds of destroyed homes and their remains floating everywhere. Palm trees and other trees had been yanked out of the ground. What looked like a little island was actually the top of one of the highest mountains of the area. Thousands of drowned people and animals floated in the water. The strange thing was that everything happened on broad daylight. The sun shone just like it did before the disaster, as if nothing had happened. All of us in the group cried uncontrollably. The lady who had fainted had regained consciousness. The emotional pain was very strong. It made you want to cease living. The guide tried to console us by reminding us that they were merely projected images, and that it wasn't really happening right now. Me thoughts were all over the place. The images we saw went in and out of my mind like in a television with a child holding the remote control. My nervous system was about to burst. I imagined horrible scenes relating to my family. I thought that maybe some of the people who had drowned were them. Our seats revolved slowly so that we could observe all the horror. The only thing not covered by the turbulent sea of the area we were looking at was that small portion of land that looked like a little island. I don't know if all of Puerto Rico was now underwater, since we could only see this area in particular. The water looked dark and dirty. The debris in it was tremendous. I didn't see any more birds, and the only human presence was us. We returned to where we faced the guide and his creations again. I thought I saw sadness in the face of the one that called himself Amaran. We headed towards that small portion of land that was not underwater. Was this all that was left of Puerto Rico? Or maybe now Puerto Chico? We descended to this place. There was no vegetation and the ground was wet. It was a very small piece of land. Maybe 20 homes could be built there. From this closer perspective, the sea looked even darker and all the things floating in it we could see clearer. The seawater rain caused by the impact had ceased. All of a sudden the image went wavy and it disappeared. In its place the walls of that place again were made visible. It was the end of that projection and I was relieved. I didn't want to see any more. I only wanted to get out of that place. Fear though, I think, kept me from doing it. Also, I didn't see doors or windows. Even if I had mustered up the courage to do it, again, where would I run to? How would I get out? And there was also the possibility that those two creatures would go after me. The mere thought of them touching me again was enough to make me to stay put. The man dressed in black gave us a few moments to settle down. Some, myself included, were still crying. He insisted that what we'd just seen was just an image, but that in reality, that's how it would happen. Those words destroyed me. In reality, that's how it would happen. Which reality? At the time I didn't know what that was. My own reality had died. They had killed it. Now I ask that you calm down. Remember that is not happening now, they're only images. The next projection will only be shown partially, in just one dimension. It will be less difficult then to absorb the information. However, I warn you that these will be the most shocking, so be prepared. With Theseus's words the room went dark again. I gulped and for a moment stopped breathing. We started to turn again in our seats and then suddenly stopped. With this movement, instead of being in the last row, I was now in the first. The person that had been in front of me was now to my right and the boy that was next to me was now behind. The guide and his friends to our right. This projection we saw as if we were in a movie theater, except that the images were clearer and with a lot of depth perception. It was like watching the events through a glass. I remember looking back to see if I could catch a view of the projector or device that was playing these images that looked so real. The only thing I could see though were their faces filled with terror of the others in the group, and the room's infinite darkness. This projection had no sound and it resembled a documentary. The narrator was he who had stated was an extraterrestrial. Chapter 5, Projection Number 3. It started by showing different government buildings on Earth. The last was the White House in Washington, D.C., he told us. The different governments that rule the nations, humanity, have their own interests in mind. The primary focus of these rulers is power and absolute control. Their only objective is to acquire wealth at all costs. In this scheme, money and the excessive value it has been given play a major role. This blinds them to the imminent destruction. While he spoke, we could see how the United States presidential building started to shake and crumble by what seemed to be an earthquake. It was left in ruins. The next images showed seismic activity throughout the whole world. As we watched, he informed us that earthquakes and tsunamis would become an everyday occurrence in our world. We would come to live in a society where building construction would cease. We saw places devastated by the Holocaust and people escaping from their destroyed homes. You could see the pain and suffering in their faces. We started to cry in agony. Everything we saw was horrendous. I asked myself why I kept watching when I really didn't want to see any more or hear that being. Afterwards, I saw hundreds of people in something that resembled a camp. It was filled with tents and shelters made out of car tires. Everything and everyone looked dirty. In the distance, I could see some ruins, but I couldn't make out what they were. The human told us that during these times there would be very little people left on Earth due to the earthquakes and horrible sickness. All the water would be severely contaminated. He also told us that there would not be any kind of sea life whatsoever. We actually saw inside the water and there wasn't a trace of any kind of fish or algae, only black waters and garbage. He added, birds would become extinct due to man, though they will feed him for a while. In other images, we saw pileups of military equipment. The one who called himself Amaron informed us that peace would reign in those days, not for the efforts of our governments, but because of the lack of people. There'd be actually only one government, a global government, one whose sole purpose would be the well-being of the survivors. No sooner he said this, he then showed us a grand island. It had a great dome made of glass of some kind that covered it completely. He told us that the world government would build a huge floating city over the contaminated waters. The earthquakes wouldn't affect it and tsunamis would be detected with enough time to avoid them. This island city will be like an enormous ship steered clear of all danger. Only certain privileged people would be able to live there. There they would have all kinds of amenities, comforts, and luxuries. The government would make sure that all who reside there are free from all types of illnesses. This artificial island will be named Atlantis. They would all proclaim themselves chosen by the originator, God, but their behavior towards the rest of humanity would be deplorable and shameful. The citizens of the rest of the planet would survive with very little resources. If anyone would try to get close to this governmental city, they would immediately be annihilated by lasers installed on four observation towers located on the dome exteriors. No one would be allowed in or out. In the images, I could discern the shape of the island. It was squared and it had cylindrical, glass-like towers in its corners. They were connected to the immense dome. Along its edges there were glass tunnels that almost touched the water. I could see people walking in them as well as on the towers. Inside the dome you could see vegetation and buildings. The dome seemed to be resting on some sort of net that served as its skeletal structure. We were showed images of its interiors. It was a very pretty place. It had gardens and orchards. Along the streets people walked dressed in the same style of clothing that we use now, clothing that didn't seem futuristic looking at all. Streets were made out of cement or something like it. I saw places that looked like stores, restaurants with people seated on the exterior, and many others on bicycles. The buildings were not high and their architecture had a blend of styles, Oriental, European, American, contemporary, and others. The people in this artificial place looked healthy and worry-free. Meanwhile, as we were shown, the rest of humanity rotting. People living in ruins and rubbish, wandering lonely places. We were told that money would lose its value and that only the strongest would survive. Also, we were shown people trying to form some sort of government, but their very nature wouldn't allow it. Fires would spread throughout the entire planet. There will be so many dead from hunger, disease, and earthquakes that they'll be thrown in those fires. There wouldn't be time or resources to breathe them. We were told society as we know it would cease to exist. Only the rich, powerful, and disease-free people would live in the floating city. The rest of humanity would return to a semi-prehistoric state. The air would smell like death, but the stench would not reach the governmental island city. Its dome would protect her. We were shown how the sky slowly saturated with ash. The clouds will be black and so will the rain. He told us that there would come a day in which man will feed off of man in order to survive. Many will choose to commit suicide. All this information was accompanied by the corresponding images. I almost threw up when I saw a family feeding themselves. He said that after all of this and more had transpired, there would take place the major event, the cataclysmic earthquake. Its magnitude and duration would be like nothing ever seen before. Its force would be enough to destroy the nuclear plant that powered the floating island. The explosion of this power plant would initiate a chain reaction of multiple explosions across the globe. Hundreds of abandoned nuclear weapons would blow up. The great city and its inhabitants will be reduced to bits and pieces and would sink into the dark sea forever. The planet's geography would suffer extraordinary and drastic changes. Nothing will look the same. We were shown the planet from a distance in space, a dark and smoke globe, a dead planet. There would barely be any survivors. How did those survive? We were not told. The planet we were shown was covered with ash, and the sun and its rays could not penetrate the sky. Night lasted throughout the day. Night and day and time ceased to have any meaning. The guy then told us that then would come the time of the originator. This I honestly didn't understand. I am now going to try my best to describe the images we saw next. Our world appeared in darkness. A group of people gathered around a fire. Their clothing looked like rags. It looked as if they were roasting sausages. In their faces there was death in life. They were all skin and bones, men, women and children. The ash covered them from head to toe. Close to that group there was a cave that gave off light. I thought that maybe there were a few more of them inside. One of them was looking at the dark sky. He gestured and pointed to the sky. We didn't hear what he was saying or shouting since the projection had no sound. The others went to him and when they looked up they started to jump from joy, but I could also see in their faces a little madness. More people came out of the cave and joined the apparent celebration. We still couldn't see what was causing this behavior. All of a sudden something from the sky illuminated all these 50 or so people. They were all staring as if hypnotized. They stopped moving. They seemed like trapped in a circle by the light. We all observed the group of people lit up in that circle, but we still couldn't see where the light was coming from. It looked as if it was coming from the darkness of the sky. Suddenly another smaller column of light appeared that shone in front of the group. Inside this light the figure of a man seemed to descend to the ground. The small column of light blended with the larger one and the man addressed two group. We couldn't hear what he said though. The image slowly withdrew from us. From above all we could see were little shadows. The fire looked like a little lit match. In the sky appeared an intense light, as if the sun itself had come down below the clouds of ash. The light descended slowly, away from us. It looked as if it got bigger as it went down. The light formed a brilliant circle. It was enormous, maybe even a few miles in diameter. It got to a point where we could see its upper part. It was an illuminated object, solid and gigantic. On its surface it had glass-like buildings of different bright colors. Its appearance was glorious and magnificent as it reached the ground. It looked like a brooch of precious stones. Illuminated and full of colors, there was great contrast between it and that place of darkness. Spread out in the distance we noticed other rays of light like the one covering the group of people we were looking at. If from a distance this object looked the size of a football field, then up close it must have been much larger. Imagine if you will a green tray with intense colored square, round, and triangular objects. We saw the ray of light ascend and with the visitor and the rest of the people. Only darkness was left behind. The group climbed up to the point where the light was coming from. The other rays of light started to do the same. It looked as if those two transported people in them, but we couldn't see it clearly. In the middle of the darkness we now only saw the giant stadium-like object that gave off a fluorescent green light and the small fire on the ground. There was then movement over that object and immediately we saw columns of light form a circle on the object's surface. Through those columns of light descended little figures. After, the lights again ascended. I started to notice the image and the object got closer to us. According to the images, we were approaching from the top. The green tree turned out to be grass, trees, and vegetation. There were flowers, fruits, and animals there. The precious stones turned out to be houses and homes. From a great sphere in the center of this object poured a crystal clear river. The river ran through blue turquoise canals up to the edges of that green tree. It flowed in two directions, from the center to right and from the center to the left. Everything was full of color. In this place, this city, were placed the survivors who now ran and jumped from joy while they feed off the fruits of the trees. Some also bathed in the crystal clear waters. It was all illuminated, like daylight, a daylight that formed a sort of blanket or aura in the form of a dome that covered the city. The brightness reflected in the streets that looked like they were made out of gold bricks, or at least gold-colored. As we watched the survivors rejoice, we heard a voice. "This is a gift from the Originator. It was created with the help of the other humanities of the cosmos. In this place you will live for 1,000 of your years. By then your earth will be healthy again so that you can start over. There you will find all kinds of seeds and everything necessary for your re-establishment." The projection ended by showing us a green landscape full of life, a blue sky, and flowers everywhere. The people who lived on this place looked happy and content. Animal life was abundant. It was our earth. The image then undulated like ripples in the water and it vanished. Everything was again dark for a moment. I heard some of the others crying. Then that light that came from nowhere returned. Our seats turned until we were facing the human. The walls had recovered their solid gray appearance. He told us that soon I'd be time to return. "Do not be afraid of them. They will not harm you," he said. The creatures then lifted their arms as if to show him their palms. He placed his own palms against theirs. The creatures then went one by one and placed their hands on our foreheads. As they did, people would lose consciousness. I remember when I first saw this, I got so agitated I thought I'd die from a heart attack. I didn't want them to place their damn hands on me. At the same time, I actually wanted to lose consciousness. Besides, this was probably a sign that this nightmare was now over. The little man with the big head stopped in front of me. His big, bulging, dark eyes fixed on me. I felt sort of hypnotized, either from some suggestive power the creature had or from the fear I felt. He lifted his arm and directed his hand, palm facing outward, towards my forehead. I wanted to run, escape, and scream with all my heart. He touched my forehead and everything went dark. I blinked and saw brightness. I saw one of those little men at a distance. He had in his hands a small black instrument in the shape of a rectangular box. He brought it closer to his eyes with both hands. The box gave a ray of light that left me blind for a second and that I then felt on my forehead. It happened again and I didn't have time to think or react. I do not know how many times the process repeated itself or for what reason, it all happened so quickly. Chapter 6. When I came to and opened my eyes, I started to cry. I couldn't contain myself. Never before had I felt so many unknown emotions. I was back in my car and held the wheel as if my life depended on it. I was still crying by the time I noticed that it was daytime, morning. Where was I? I thought to myself that this wasn't Labadura and that I must have woken somewhere else. The road I took from work was made out of tar and the one I was on now was mostly a dirt and gravel road and was much wider. I had no idea where I was. I looked everywhere yet nothing seemed familiar. I didn't see people or houses, the area was deserted. I was able to stop crying and when I was about to get out of the car was when I heard the military planes. Then, when I looked up at the sky I saw it, round in shape and blue-gray in color. At first I only saw its bottom section. It had a dome made out of some reflective material. The UFO didn't make a sound. It was suspended in the air like some act of magic while three military planes surveyed it. They flew very low, almost as if they could hit the ground. I even thought they might actually crash into each other. One of them got dangerously close to the UFO. I took my cousin's camera and got out of the car.